Good morning and welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most vital segment of our society. To those of you like me who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political and religious institutions which govern and control our nation. And we recognize that considerable malfeasance also exists in the media, in the military, and also those influencing our economy. We realize that they are the problem, they're not the solution. So instead of trying to rearrange the color of the deck chairs on our sinking Titanic of state, our mission here is to scour the news, looking behind the headlines, so we know who is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet and understand why they are doing so, all while predicting how their ill-advised and inappropriate plans will influence our planet. In addition, we recognizing in particular that there's not much hope in any human institution, we devote a full hour of this program to attempting to engage with God on His terms, which isn't through faith, but instead through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only glimmer of hope in our increasingly troubled world. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, either during the first hour today as we dive into the Torah, or in the second as we engage with IQ al-Rasuli and discuss the consequence of Islam, you're welcome to do so. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. We left off in our review of Yahweh's testimony regarding the his comments to both Adam, to Chawa, and to the serpent representing Satan in the garden regarding their malfeasance 2 days ago. The last line that we considered was when Adam chose to provide a name and introduced a name for his wife. There were so many powerful insights in this that all provide clues as to how we reconcile that relationship and re-enter a Garden of Eden-like state with God. I'm going to repeat it and then we'll move on. It begins the man, which is Ha-Adam. Adam really is a noun, not a proper noun, and therefore it is Ha-Adam, the man, as opposed to Adam as the name of an individual, called. And called is from Kara. Kara is probably the most important verb in the whole of the Torah, perhaps even in the whole of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Kara is a verb which means to call out, to summon, to invite, to meet with, to welcome, to read, and to recite. It is the basis of the path that God has provided from the realm outside of the garden where we live today back home. So the man Kara, being summoned, proclaimed, announced, recited, read, his wife's woman's, this is Isha. Isha is an extraordinarily important term, particularly as it's explained in this sentence, because Isha is not only the Hebrew word for woman, mother, wife, female, it is also the feminine version of the Hebrew word for fire, which is the form of light that exists apart from the sun in the ancient world. And there are four of these kara, these mikre, that God invites us to participate on, are in, that specifically asks us to come into the presence of the Isha, which would be the feminine or maternal manifestation of Yahweh's light. Now, the reason that this is important here is that these mikra, the very title that Yahweh has for the seven steps that lead to his home, back to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden, that the mikra is based upon this verb, kara, the first verb in this sentence. And four of them not only ask us to walk into the presence, come into the presence of the Isha, the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's light, we are now told that the name that was being given to the Isha is Chawa. Now, of course, in your English Bibles, you will read the name Eve. Eve is the name of a pagan goddess. There is absolutely no justification of any kind for Eve. None. It's not a transliteration of Chawa. It isn't a translation of Chawa. And Chawa is a proper name. It is a shim. It is a personal and proper designation. Now, this feminine manifestation of God's light, this woman's name, became Chawa. Chawa means the renewal and the restoration of life. It speaks of a shelter and providing a protective covering. It also speaks of declaring, interpreting, and informing. So in the name Chawa, we have a feminine, maternal individual who is associated with life and with light, who provides information to help us restore our life and be protected by God. It's a very powerful name. All of that, of course, is lost when it's corrupted and changed to Eve. And all of that is found when we actually consider the name that Yahweh provided for this individual. He then says the man called his wife's name Chawa because, this is from the Hebrew key, because, so this is the reason for her name. And it not only helps us better understand the name, but it tells us this name was chosen not because it just is the sound of it flowed off of his tongue in a way that was pleasing to him. It's not because he liked the sound of it. There was a specific reason that he chose this name. And it gets right back to the problem of changing God's testimony so that it sounds better to human ears, to change it back to Eve as opposed to Chawa. Well, he said he chose it because she exists as. This is from Haya. Haya happens to be the basis of Yahweh's name. It means was, is, and always will be. The mother. The M. Now we're getting right back to God asking us on four of these Mikra to come into His presence, the presence of the maternal aspect of His life. It says that Chawa exists as the mother, biological or adoptive, life-giving, care-providing, nurturing and protecting mother of all life. Che, familial existence. So we learn that Chawa's name conveys the concepts of mother and life, and that she is the source of all life. And what we're talking about here is that obviously she's not the mother of guinea pigs and rodents. She is a mother of those humans born with a nesama, which is a conscience, which enables us to come to know God, benefit from what she is offering, and to live forever. If you're going to live, you're going to live because you avail yourselves of all that Chawa and Kara and Isha and M and Che and Haya collectively represent. So here's a sentence with almost every operative term one needs to know to return back to the Garden of Eden. Kara, meaning to be invited, to be summoned, to be welcomed, to be greeted, to read and to recite. Wife Isha, the feminine manifestation of God's life. Name, a proper and personal designation. Chawa, the one who provides information regarding the restoration and renewal of life, protecting it. Existing as, was, is, and will always be the Emma mother of all life, familial existence. Powerful insight. That was from Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 3:20. Then the last statement that we considered leads to this. And Yahweh Almighty made for the man, Adam, and his wife, the Isha, garments. This is kutanet, coverings to wear, of hide, of ore, of animal skin, from ore to be exposed. Dressing them, adorning them, clothing them, covering them. So Adam and Chawa had made their own clothes from fig leaves, but they still felt naked and exposed in Yahweh's presence. The fact is, man can't clothe himself satisfactorily, no matter how good he is or how hard he tries. Only God is capable of adorning us appropriately to appear before him. So just as he did on Mount Moriah, God performed the work which was necessary to form and fashion the first family's garments. Fortunately for us, as a direct result of accepting his gift, we are adorned in the set-apart spirit's garment of light, which is what has been conveyed by juxtaposing these two thoughts. When you come to recognize everything the last two sentences represent, you find this opportunity to be clothed in the maternal aspect of God's life, and for of that providing both the opportunity to be born, to be mothered, to be nurtured, as well as to be given restored life. So in this case, since Adam and Chawa were now estranged and, more important, now dying, a temporary solution was required, and the metaphorical representation for life depicted in Passover with the sacrifice of the perfect Passover lamb is therefore conveyed as being the source of resolving this consequence of us rejecting God's testimony, which is death, being restored by this skin, this garment made of the skin of a lamb. Therefore, to temporarily resolve the problem of Adam and Chawa dying, Yahweh personally covered them in garments made of leather, in this case, the hide of a sacrificial lamb. As an interesting aside, since they both began with the silent letters, at least as it is presented in Hebrew, neither the Ain nor the Aleph is actually silent, but instead a vowel, there is no difference between the, at least in pronunciation phonetically, between the Hebrew word for hide, or, and light, which is also or. So I don't suspect that that is a coincidence, since this is specifically about the set-apart spirit's garment of light. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. As we turn the page, the era of man begins, at least the era of man whereby we can begin counting time. If you're looking back, the year is 3968 BCE on our pagan calendars. It's the year zero on Yah's timepiece. This is what we find occurred. Year zero, Yah, or year 3968 BCE. Yahweh Almighty said, "Behold, the man, or Adam if you prefer, has become, will be, similarly, like, somewhat associated with, one from us, being acquainted with good, which is Tob, and bad, which is Ra, evil, that which is distressful and troubling. Now, lest he stretch out his hand and also take from the tree of life and eat, existing forever, Yahweh Almighty sent him out from the protected and sheltered enclosed garden, the Gan Eden, of overwhelming joy, delight, and ultimate pleasure, to work the ground from which relationally he was taken." This is Barashith, it's 22 and 23. Lots of powerful insights once again here. Again, Yahweh's name is used. You'll find Lord in your English Bibles. Lord is the title God assigns to Satan because it's Satan's desire to lord over mankind. Satan has already been sentenced. He has been received his punishment as a for having twisted Yah's testimony and misled Chawa, who then beguiled Adam. And we therefore ought not call God by the title that he uses to describe Satan. So it's Yahweh Almighty said, and as he is presenting this, the thing that he advised Adam and Chawa not to do was to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know, it's, you can't be in an environment that is pure joy if you are exposed to that which is harmful, which is injurious, which is evil. You just can't. And therefore, the moment that Adam and Chawa chose to ignore God's instructions and chomp down on the very thing he said don't do, they then became exposed to that which was not pleasant. And therefore, they could not continue to live in a garden of overwhelming happiness, of ultimate pleasure, because they now were aware of that which was wrong, which was injurious, which was harmful. Now, God had to make that a possibility, because if he didn't make that a possibility, then Adam and Chawa literally would have been toys. They would have had no choice on their own. They could not have chosen to engage and endure in a loving relationship with God, because there would have been no other option. So the tree had to be there so that they could choose, exercising free will, to continue to engage and endure in this perfect, loving, and harmonious relationship. They chose to ignore that guidance, and so this is the consequence. You can't have access to painful thoughts, painful activities, and be in a perpetually happy place. Now, how does then God endure with this? Because it is God is saying that Adam now exists like he is, and he's using the plural here, because when it comes to relating to humankind, God chooses to relate through two manifestations, one physical, one energy-based. The set-apart spirit is light, and the sun is a corporeal, therefore a diminished manifestation, a physical manifestation. And so he's using the collective we, which is also conveyed by Elohim, Almighty. Now, the way that God can deal with this is that for the period of what we would consider to be 6,000 years. This is from 3968 BCE to the year 2033 CE. It's exactly 6,000 years. And we have gone through in the past and itemized what happened every 1,000 years through this process. But for 6,000 years, for at least as time flows on our planet, which is completely different than time would appear to a spiritual entity like Yahweh, he has chosen to endure an exposure to that which is raw, harmful, bad, evil, and distressing. But we will consider in a moment how he deals with that when we return to Shattering Myths. Back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Iyana. We're considering this great transition in the presentation of our relationship with God. This transition that begins really the start of prophetic time. This is 3968 BCE. Everything that transpired up to this point does not start the time clock of man. The time clock to our reconciliation with God begins at this very moment when Adam and Chawa were sent out of the garden. Now, what's interesting here is that over 6,000 years, we will return to this very place that they are being excluded from. The entire earth becomes like the Garden of Eden upon Yahweh's return, which will be on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, in 2033, year 6000 Yah. And then 5 days later on Sukkah, which is to camp out with God, we return to this very condition in the Garden of Eden. Now, I was at the end of the last segment, I was talking about how God resolves this issue of him not being saddened in eternity when, in fact, he is exposed currently to that which is both good and bad, harmful, painful, injurious, displeasing, raw. And that is that that God created a mechanism with light that he can obliterate that which is negative. And rather than God being all-knowing, as religious individuals are wont to make him, he isn't, by his own admission. In fact, he can't be all-knowing and ignore negativity. And so he created a mechanism where those of us who choose to be adorned in his set-apart spirit's garment of light are flooded and covered with light, and where there is light, there is no darkness. And so all traces of everything we have done that is harmful or injurious are gone. And that is how Yahweh sees us. That's how our relationship will be with him in eternity. It's why also when Yahusha said in his Sermon on the Mount that every jot and tittle, every letter and stroke of every Hebrew letter that comprises the Torah will continue to exist, he didn't say for all eternity. And he couldn't say for all eternity, because if he did, there would be no way for us or for God to distance ourselves forever from that which is painful, because there's much in the Torah that is like the guidance of a mother or father today. If you were to guide your children, you don't just tell them what is good for them, you also help them understand that there are things that are harmful. And so the Torah is filled with examples of things. You ought not to do this, just like you ought not eat of the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't do that. It's going to be harmful to you if you were to do so. So this is God's telling us, and he does it throughout the Torah, that there's a consequence of ignoring his advice. And because of that, the existing Torah cannot continue in its present form to exist into eternity. Otherwise, we and God would be reminded of the consequence of us rejecting God's testimony. And therefore, we will be given, and Torah means guidance, we'll be given guidance which is wholly consistent with the Torah, but only the positive aspect, so that in eternity we can enjoy the liberation that we have of becoming spiritual, being able to travel to the vast expanses of the new universe that God is going to create, but while at the same time never being exposed to anything that is painful. And that's the same technique that God himself is going to use. Now, what's interesting also about this is that when we're enclosed in the covenant relationship, we are part of God's family. We have direct association with him. And when we choose to reject his instructions, we are disassociated from him. Adam and Chawa would be expelled from the garden. And it is the process of the covenant that has us walk away from the institutions of man, from religion and from politics, right back to God, right back to this perfect condition in the garden. So the very thing that he has now extricized us from via Adam and Chawa, he has provided the provision for us to return. So most of the time, Elohim is used, and it was used here as Yahweh Almighty. It is designed to convey the ancient Hebrew concept of the royal we, and represents the singular entity held in the highest esteem. However, Elohim, which is the plural of El, meaning mighty one or God, is followed here by Nachnu. So Yahweh is expressing an association with an audience. Therefore, we can hold that we refers to the heavenly host, which would be Yah's spiritual messengers, the Malach, or that Yahweh is still associating everything that he has just said with the son who became the Passover lamb, and therefore the garment, the nature of the garment that Yah used to address Adam and Chawa, and also with the set-apart spirit, the M, the mother, the Isha, the Chawa, the feminine manifestation of his life that provides light and therefore is incorporating the fullness of his character and his nature into this specific revelation. I think the latter is more accurate than the former. Adam and Chawa's expulsion from the Garden of Eden, the Gan Eden, might sound like God is being intolerant, overbearing, and uncompassionate. You know, it's a very interesting insight into the nature of religion, the nature of man, the nature of God. Religions will tell you so long as you do more good deeds than bad deeds, so long as your good deeds are better than your bad deeds, that everything will be copacetic with God. So long as you acquiesce to whatever it is that they ask you to do, everything will be just fine. God is saying, no, one mistake, and our relationship is severed. Now, he provided a way back to resolve that, but he says, one, you know, if you choose to ignore my instructions, then particularly on something this important, that I'm not going to compromise. And I'm not going to say, all right, that's okay. Just because I told you that if you ate from this tree, you were going to die, don't pay any attention to that. I was just kidding. No, God said, if you do this, you're going to die. God says, throughout his testimony, if you ignore the seven steps that he has provided home, that begins with the doorway of life called Passover, ends with camping out with God at Sukkah, which is the seventh of the seven Mikre, he just says, you're going to die. If you don't engage in the covenant, you're going to die. He's not about to say, oh, I was just kidding about that. I was really lying to you. None of that is true. That's what one of the things that irks me so much about religion is they're willing to make their God a liar. I ought to think about that. God is unequivocal here. He is uncompromising. He's saying, you are now estranged. This is a direct consequence. You know, you're going to go out into the world of death and dying. You're going to go out into the world of pain and suffering. You're going to experience what life is like separated from me. Now, he provided a way back, but you have to understand he is being intolerant. And he's being intolerant because if he wasn't being intolerant, he'd become a liar. He'd become unjust. So, there is absolutely no possibility based upon this that Yahweh is going to renege on what he has said just to accept us, particularly accept those who have chosen to ignore the terms and conditions of his covenant and the path that he has provided home, the instructions that are found in his Torah. So it bears repeating. Adam had unabridged access to all that was good. All he gained from his deal with the devil was an awareness of that which is evil, of distress and trouble. He had been given everything, direct access to God, companionship, nurturing, shelter, joy, pleasure, life everlasting. He didn't have to do anything for any of these benefits. Eden was a gift. But as a consequence of choosing to reject Yah's directions and generosity, he was now out on his own. Destined to work for his own survival. It is the same choice we must all make. Do we want to rely on God or ourselves? Our fellow man, as Adam did when he was influenced by Chawa, his wife, or on God's instructions? We're all given that opportunity. As we previously discovered, in the garden, the tree of life represents the upright pole upon which Yahusha was hung on Passover. It is the permanent solution to Adam's dilemma. It's the doorway to complete reconciliation of one's life, the restoration of one's life. Those who consume its fruit live forever. Now, based upon what we are told later in the Torah and Prophets, Adam would ultimately come to avail himself of this gift and was eventually immersed in Yahweh's spirit, but not on this day. He had chosen to be acquainted with bad, evil, trouble, and distress, and he would get his wish. Adam was banished from the protective enclosure, and it was a hostile world out there, replete with suffering, anguish, fear, toil, pain, and yes, even death. Those things had been going on, by the way, outside in the garden for a very long time. Death and dying had besieged our planet and were part of the natural aspect of life and death for many millions of years prior to Adam and Chawa being expelled. Now, these troubling conditions, as I said, had existed outside the garden enclosure all along. That is the reason that Eden had walls and guards. Yes, Eden had walls and it had guards. That was to keep all of the viciousness that was part of life at bay. The fact is, we aren't told how long Adam, Chawa, and Yahweh camped out together before Adam and Chawa chose to reject God's guidance and their expulsion from the garden. It could have been millions of years, although I suspect it was probably 70, based upon Adam representing the first millennia of human history and his life lasting 930 years post-exile. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're explaining the nature of what occurred outside of the garden, inside, which led to outside of the garden. It also is interesting to note that there was a problem being highlighted by Yahweh's concern that Adam and Chawa now go to the garden, the tree in the middle of the garden, which was the tree of life, and consume it at this point. It's the same problem that actually exists in the religion of Christianity. If you were to focus on the benefits of becoming immortal, which is the benefit of Pesach, but separate Pesach Passover from Matzah Unleavened Bread, which is the second of Yahweh's seven invitations to meet with him, then you become immortal, but you're still imperfect. And if you're immortal and imperfect, that's the worst of all possible circumstances. That's like Christians focusing on the cross and never getting beyond it. If they understood that what occurred there was Passover, and it was the Passover lamb making a sacrifice for their immortality, and they stopped right there, then they would be in the same condition that Adam and Chawa would have been in if, now flawed because they rejected God's testimony, they went and became immortal, based upon the consuming fruit from the tree of life. That would mean that there would be no end to their existence, but they would be eternally separated from God. There is such a place. It's known as hell, although the proper term is Sheol, which is the place of questioning. It is the place where it was conceived for Hasatan and the religious types that would join with him. And so, it is the worst of all possible circumstances, and it is, if Christianity were actually explained and followed to the point that what occurred on Passover was understood and embraced, but that was it, and you paid no attention to what happened the following day on Matzah, Unleavened Bread, you would find yourself in the same situation that Yahweh was trying to preclude Adam and Chawa from being in, which is to become immortal and yet still flawed. And that's the reason he wanted them out of the garden, because he was going to provide a path back which enabled them to be perfect. Remember, the third condition for participating in the covenant, God says, walk to me and become perfect. The means to perfection occurs on the invitation to meet with God that follows Passover, that being matzah, unyeasted bread. That leads, of course, immortality and perfection. Pesach and Matzah then lead to Bikurim, which is firstborn children, where we are adopted into God's family. So God had no choice in the matter. Adam had made a choice, Chawa had made her choice, and that left God with no choice in this matter. He expelled Adam toward the east, towards the direction of the rising sun, from the protected and enclosed garden, the Gan Eden, of delight and ultimate pleasure, of this favorable state of great gladness. And he caused cherubim to camp with blazing swords, who went back and forth to keep watch on the way to the tree of life. In other words, he was going to, at all possible means, to make certain that they didn't do what the religion of Christianity has done, which is to overemphasize the life eternal without the benefit of matzah perfection. And so he sent cherubim, which are spiritual beings that follow God's orders, to make certain that there would be no readmission into the Garden of Eden. Today, the Garden of Eden is under Lake Van. It's an extraordinarily blue and clear lake in eastern Turkey. You can, and we've spent the time previously by analyzing the four rivers that begin there so that we understand precisely where God said this was located. And therefore, we now have a situation where to approach the tree of life, we have to follow the path that God has provided. There would be no direct access to it without the entire path. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment.